This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasodhi. And today we're discussing cervical cancer. I mean, it is the second most frequent cancer among women aged 15 to 44. And this tells us that the disease hits women when they're young and in the most vibrant years of their lives. And yet it is also one of the most easily preventable cancers because we now have, or we have had for quite a long time now, at least in Malaysia for 11 years, target for the HPV infection, which is the main cause of cancer, and that is really the vaccine for the human papillomavirus. So in conjunction with Cervical Cancer Awareness Month in January, we're catching up with Dr. Noor Azmi Mat Adnan. He's a consultant gynae-oncologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center to discuss how we can stay on track to prevent and eliminate cervical cancer. Welcome to the show, Dr. Azmi. How are you today?
Thank you, Meera. Very good.
You know, in your line of work, cervical cancer alarms most of us, I think. But what does the cancer actually do to a woman?
First of all, we need to understand that when it comes to cervical cancer, the cause has been known nowadays is due to human papilloma virus. This virus is very common in our community, and it was estimated around 80% of our people, men and women, will be infected with this disease at some time in their life. Fortunately, most of us are healthy, and 80 to 90% of us will get rid of the infection naturally. However, when they stay longer in our body, especially in certain part of our body, they will integrate their DNA into our cell and causing cancer development. The only good thing about cancer cervix is that they tend to have what they call it pre-cancerous stage before they can become cancer. And normally this takes around at least 10 to 15 years normally. So these are the stage where we can have a lot of time to look for that before they become cancer.
Okay. Are there signs and symptoms at all?
Unfortunately, no. In the early stage of cervical, when the cervix is being infected, right, there's no symptom at all. However, when cancer has developed and it's quite in advanced stage, then the woman will have abnormal pervaginal discharge with bloody, smelly, and sometimes pain or sometimes bleeding after intercourse. So those are common symptoms. But when the disease has spread to the local area, causing the bone and nerve, then pain become features. But these are very late features.
Okay, and you don't want to get to that stage. However, with many cancers in Malaysia, we do pick it up very late. We pick up at stage 3 and 4, and cervical cancer is in the same boat. We always pick it up at the late stage. How has that impacted the woman's outcome as well as her survival? What does that look like?
Okay, the irony is that the cervix is very accessible to us, because you can go to the vagina, you can expose the cervix, you can look at it and so forth. Yeah. So with this, and we have had PET smear for quite some time now, we can examine the cervix, we can diagnose the precancerous stage, and this is very easily treatable and they can be cured. However, most women do not come forward due to probably embarrassment or tidak apa attitude, or I wouldn't get this cancer and so forth. So when the time, by the time they get the symptoms, as I told you earlier, those are basically they are at stage 3 or 4, and at this stage, surgery is not possible anymore. So you need to undergo radiotherapy. So the treatment tend to be protracted with loss of fertility for younger women, and this can be very devastating. And as you mentioned earlier, in the peak of their life, career and so forth, just wrecked their life.
Are you seeing more and more cases of cervical cancer?
Fortunately, it's becoming a bit less nowadays. The awareness is slowly creeping into our Malaysian women. And as you may be aware, that we have already started vaccination in school-age girls. But that effect will only be seen in the next maybe 10, 15 years. before. But for existing adult women, we still see cancer cases on and off.
Okay, so we're in our 11th year since we introduced the vaccine to our young girls. And it's been 11 years. Those girls will be in their 20s now. What does that mean for them? Do they still have to do pap smears?
When we vaccinate young girls, we presume they are sexually naive. Therefore, it means that they are now have antibody created against the any oncoming HPV infection. So when they start their sexual debut soon or when they get married and so forth, they will repel this infection much, much better compared to those women who are not vaccinated. And in view, and we know that women at the stage of their sexual debut around early 20s and so forth, the prevalent infection is very, very high. So with this vaccination program instituted in them, so we expect to see a much reduction in precancerous as well as cancer of the cervix in the future.
Okay, so pap smears or should they other tests?
Yes, that's a very good question because the vaccination is supposed to protect against about 70 to 90, 95% of all cases of cancer of the cervix, depending on what vaccine that they have got. But there are another 5 to probably about 20% which we do not know the exact cause of the cancer of the cervix. Yeah. So for that reason, even though you have been vaccinated, you should still go for screening.
And pap smears, it looks at cervical cells to see if they are abnormal. So that would be the first line. But then, you know, this has been available. This screening test has been available to Malaysian women, even in the government sector, for years. Yes. And, you know, it's for free. And yet women don't come forward. And you have mentioned and you've given some of the reasons why. However, I think discomfort is also one reason as to why women don't want to come forward. I mean, what would you say to women that could possibly, you know, have them at least going to the government clinic to get themselves checked out? What would you say to them?
Okay, I mean, based on the various reasons that are always given by the ladies about not coming forward, one is embarrassment. The other one is I wouldn't get the disease. I'm a good girl and so forth. And my husband is good as well. And I'm not comfortable with being examined and so forth. So nowadays, we have what you call it using a self-test examination. Mm-hmm. My colleague in University of Malaya, Professor Wu Yin Ling, she has started the ROSE project. ROSE project is basically we use the handphone apps and self-test pap smear, and then they do HPV DNA testing. And in this case, the woman does not have to be seen by a doctor or even a nurse. And they can do this at home. And then they can mail this sample. And then the result will be forwarded to them. And if the sample become positive, report is positive, then they will be called back to the hospital for further evaluation.
Okay. And what does this test look like? I mean, are you taking a sample from where?
From the vagina.
Okay.
But unfortunately, there's no blood test for that one.
But, you know, we do know then when a pap smear is carried out, you know, the doctor, you know, has to insert a swab pretty deep into the vagina to actually get a proper sample. Do women at home have to do the same thing?
Yes, because when the smear, the pap smear is being done in the traditional way, normally we insert a speculum. The doctors are there with the speculum that will expose the cervix so that we can sample the cell from the cervical surface, for the cervix surface. However, in the case of self-test HPV DNA testing, it is a small, just like a cotton bud, probably a bit bigger than that. They just insert it gently on your own into the vagina, and then just maybe just roll it a bit so that you can sample the fluid that is in your vagina.
Okay.
That is good enough for
sure. So it doesn't have to go as deep as what you would in a hospital setting.
still have to go pretty deep because you don't want to go just to the outer part of the vagina. Yeah.
Okay. There's also HPV test checks, the cells, the DNA or RNA. You can check it for the presence of the HPV. What's that?
Okay. When we come to screening, we're all aware about two types of screening. One is a pap smear, which is basically looking at the cell. So if the cell is being infected by the virus, the cell will become abnormal and this cell will be shed into the vagina. And when we sample it, we can send to the histopathologist. They will look at it. They will say, oh, this cell is abnormal. Okay, that's fine. That is pap smear. When it comes to HPV DNA testing, is that when the virus infects certain cell, they will instruct the cell nucleus to produce viral protein. And this viral protein or even the footprint of this virus will be able to be detected when we do the same test that we use for pap smear, the fluid that we can test for HPV DNA.
Okay.
So one looking at the cell structure, the other one looking at the viral DNA.
So let's look at the two groups of women, the ones who have been vaccinated and the ones who haven't. So the ones who have been vaccinated, how often do they have to do their checks?
Okay, for those who have been vaccinated, as I mentioned earlier, they still need to do their regular pap smear. But of course, the vaccines produced in the current one they're being used in the government is either the bivalent or the quadrivalent. So they basically cover for about 70 to 80% of cancer of cervix. Yeah, so they still have to undergo their regular screening at least once in every 2 to 3 years.
Okay, all right, fair enough. And for those who haven't been vaccinated, how often do they go?
Still the same. The best for them is for those who are not vaccinated, and they haven't been having any pap smear before, so they should get their pap smear yearly for 3 years. If all the tests are negative, then they can undergo their testing every 2 to 3 years, depending on their age.
Okay. We'll come back and find out whether or not, if you have passed those early years adolescence or teenage years where, we try and vaccinate children for the human papillomavirus. When you are much older, whether or not you are recommended or is it recommended for you to get vaccinated? So that's coming up next on The Bigger Picture on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and today we're talking to Dr. Nur Azmi Mat Adnan. He's a consultant gynecologist-oncologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center. We've gone through and we're trying to see how we can prevent cervical cancer here in Malaysia. It's the second most frequent cancer, but at the same time, it's, I think, one in like three cancers only that you can actually prevent yourself from getting cervical cancer because now we have a vaccine, the human papillomavirus vaccine, which can actually prevent you from getting cervical cancer because it's a virus and a vaccine has been targeted to manage this virus. So it's the National Immunization Program in Malaysia has included the human the HPV vaccine 11 years ago. So 11 years ago, many of our young girls have been vaccinated already. So I think the question to Dr. Nur Azmi is, if you have passed that age and you have not been vaccinated, is it ever too late to get vaccinated for HPV?
In fact, the vaccine has been indicated for men and even now boys aged between 9 to 45 years old. However, we know that the best time to administer the vaccine is before a girl is sexually naive, before they start even sexual debut. And we also know that the best time to produce antibody is when you are young. So for younger girls, they tend to have higher antibody compared to adult women and compared to elderly. However, even if you have been sexually active, and in fact, even if you have been diagnosed with precancerous lesions and been treated by your gynecologist, there is still an indication for you to be vaccinated. So the answer is yes, as up to 45 years old.
You know, when you, if you're in the pre-cancer stage, or you know, you detect even before pre-cancer stage, you detect that you do in fact have the virus, will a vaccine actually help?
We must understand that the virus is very highly prevalent in our community. As I mentioned earlier, about 80% of our population, the whole world population, will be infected at some time in their life, and the majority will go off naturally. Yeah. So those that 10% can cause trouble. When it comes to vaccination, we are basically trying to avoid those 10% of persistent infection, because persistent infection is the key word leading to precancerous and cancerous formation.
Okay. So if you have, if somebody's been detected with precancer cells, what's the treatment option?
When it comes to precancerous, it means that they have infected the cell on the surface of the cervix. However, they have not gone into the main tissue of the cervix. So this is what sometimes we call in medical term as SIN1, SIN2, or sometimes they call it dysplasia. So these are not cancerous. Okay, so the woman should not be alarmed. This is non-cancerous. This is easily treatable. So what we can do, we can excise those area affected. But of course, your doctor will first do a colposcopy. Colposcopy is basically looking at the cervix under the microscope. And then he will advise that you should get your certain part of the tissue affected to be removed or excised. And if the lesion confirmed is not malignancy, then fine. It means that you are cured. Yeah. So it means once you are cured, if you haven't been vaccinated and you are more less than 45 years old, it is suitable for you if you wish to be vaccinated.
But you still carry the virus, don't you?
The virus comes and goes. And sometimes the virus, what happens is that some virus tend to stay dormant in our body. They don't cause any trouble, just stay dormant. Okay, it can last for many, many years. And what happens sometimes when we grow a bit older, our immune system comes down. We tend to have a lot of medical problems that make our immune system further down. So in this case, they can reactivate it, and then they can cause trouble.
Okay, but is it still transmissible then?
If it's dormant, normally not. They just stay dormant. But when they are actively replicating, then they can be infective to other, our sexual partners.
Okay, all right then. So what if it is full-blown cancer? Then what are the treatment options?
When it comes to full-blown cancers, cancers is basically categorized as stage. Stage mean how far they have spread to the structure nearby. So if it's stage one, they tend to be very small. They are called 1A, 1B, and so forth. So stage 1A is small. You can treat them conservatively. But when it comes to stage 1B, they tend to be bigger and normally involve a radical surgery to remove the uterus and the tissue around the cervix. When it comes to stage 2B and above 3 and 4, so normally surgery is not indicated anymore. Normally the treatment is they need to undergo radiotherapy with chemotherapy.
Okay. What are some of the challenges you face when you see women who come to you with a positive, or rather they are, malignant with cervical cancer? What's their reaction usually? What are their concerns?
Well, to be honest, the first and foremost is that when the screening shows positive, the first thing they do is they look at their husband. And that is very uncomfortable even for me. So try to make sure that they don't accuse each other. This one. The main second thing is that for us is we need to ascertain or assure the woman that at an early stage of cancer, it is still curable. So it's very important. What I normally do is that I assure the patients and to get them both to be together, to go through this treatment process and so forth. And then in case of advanced cases, then I tell them, look, you have advanced cases. This is the plan of treatment and so forth. Cure is still possible because we still have to give hope for them to be cured.
So it is, the HPV is sexually transmitted.
Yes.
And, a lot of people think Sexually transmitted means there needs to be intercourse, but in HPV, it can also transmit with oral sex. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So when you are treating the woman, what do you do, or what is your advice to the man? I mean, because he's also carrying this virus. What happens to him?
Okay. When one partner having the virus, normally the other partner also have the similar virus. Yeah. So when it comes to HPV, the high risk, I mean the oncogenic virus, apart from causing cancer of the cervix, it can also cause cancer of the anus, vagina, and in male, cancer of the penile. Okay. And of course, if they practice oral sex, can also cancer of the throat. So normally, we know that when the woman has the virus, they can spread to the husband or the spouse, okay? But unfortunately, the risk of penile cancer is much lower compared to cancer of the cervix, for obvious reason, because people tend to clean up after intercourse and so forth. So it makes it easier to clean a man rather than to clean a woman, yeah? Mm-hmm. Just one. Secondly, apart from when we talk about oncogenic virus, there's also non-oncogenic HPV. This is the one that can cause what we call viral warts, the perineal wart, the warts around the anus, around the penile skin and so forth. So that is another thing. So normally I think lately we are talking about giving vaccination to both men and female, not just female, mainly female for cancer cervix, but also for male to reduce the risk of cancer of the penile as well as reduce the perineal warts.
Okay.
So that's the latest adversary now.
Can you test a man for HPV?
At the moment, no. For research purposes, we do oral swab as well as anal swab to look for this. This is especially so for men who have sex with men. But apart from that, in other clinical practice, there is no specific way of testing men.
Okay. Are there any misconceptions about HPV that you want to share with us?
Some people advocate also saying that those who are anti-vaccine say that by giving the vaccine, we are basically encouraging our young girls to have sex. I would say this is not true, because when we vaccinate girls against HPV, we are only protecting them against HPV. We are not protecting them against hepatitis B, hepatitis C, VDRL, and so forth. So we are just protecting against cancer cervix, which is preventable. Yeah. So for those who are anti-vaccine will say this. So my advice is that get yourself vaccinated, because it is very useful and proven to be very effective against cancer of the cervix. And if you do get cancer of the cervix, then your life is going to be very miserable.
And young as well in your productive years. Yeah.
Because they tend to 15 years after sexual debut. So most people have sex around 20s, whatever it is. So by 35, 40, that's a common time to get cancer. And the second one, again, around 60, 65.
The sexual debut amongst girls in Malaysia is very young. Would you have that age?
Yes, there's a study done in Negeri Sembilan which showed that the sexual debut for girls there is 15 years old. Much that I would like to disbelieve it, but that's the facts.
Yeah, 15 years old. So I think we should not be delusional that our children are going to be, you know, celibate for the longest time.
Yes.
But reality is the age for sexual debut is low in Malaysia.
Yes.
So try and have that vaccine before they actually become active. Do you have any knowledge about whether the lockdowns delayed screening amongst women and whether school closures sort of disrupted the HPV vaccination?
Yeah, definitely, because I just have a talk with my relatives who in schools, and apparently because the nurses still come to the school to do the work to vaccinate the girls, but because of the lockdown, sometimes only half of the students are in the school, so there is some disruption to a certain extent in terms of the vaccination program. Definitely, it is. And for adult women who is scheduled, supposed to have their regular pap smear or even their some symptoms, because of the lockdown, we know that a lot of them have been delaying their coming forward because of the lockdown and the fate to come to the hospital.
I don't know, for some reason, and I could be wrong, I feel the hospital, especially the clinics, probably be the safest place because you are extremely cautious with, you know, cleansing and all of that. So I think try not to delay because it's time, right? If it is anything, time is running. WHO says that cervical cancer can be eliminated as a public health problem within a generation. Do you believe we can do that?
I do believe it is a possibility. Probably we'll not be able to totally eliminate the disease because at the moment the vaccine is able to protect against 90 to 95%, I mean the 9-valent against cancer of the cervix. There's still about 5%, you're still not sure. But if you assume that it can prevent all cancers, and in countries like Australia, where they have started their program much earlier, and they are also vaccinating their boys as well as the girls, and they have seen a reduction in numbers of precancerous lesion, the numbers of viral warts and so forth, and they have seen even, because they started early, so the number of cases of cervix also has reduced. So if they persist with their program and they have money to fund to do so, so they are estimating that they may be able to totally eliminate cancer cervix in their country in the next 20 or 30 years.
So we need to get the boys as well here at some stage.
It is a big fun to do that.
And then I suppose we're focusing on the women because the virus thrives in the cervix area.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
As opposed to the boys.
Yeah.
So funding is a problem, but perhaps if you can afford it, get your boys vaccinated.
Definitely.
Because it is crucial. It is crucial. Yeah. What would you tell the woman who's listening today?
My message to the woman who is listening today is that if you haven't been screened for cervical cancer, either pap smear or HPV DNA, or a combination of both tests, please come forward and do the test. And if you feel embarrassed to come forward, now we have a self-test which can be which is available. You need to ask certain government clinics which participate in this program. And if you have not been vaccinated, and if you are the age below 45, maybe you should consider getting yourself vaccinated. And for those women who has come forward for screening, my advice is for them to have regular screening at least every 3 years or so, and until you are about 65, then we can stop screening.
Okay. Just look up Project ROSE, R-O-S-E, and you'll probably understand a little better about these self-test kits and get them. If you are really reluctant to go and see a doctor, then try to do it yourself for everybody's, for your sake, you know, really. Don't take things for granted. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Noor Azmi Mat Adnan, consultant, gynecologist, oncologist from Subang Jaya Medical Center, joining us this January for Cervical Awareness Month on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.